Welcome back. You're listening to our number two of tonight's edition of Truth Jihad Radio, right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I'm your host, Kevin Barrett, on the web at TruthJihad.com. And, well, my guest for this hour was originally going to be Webster Tarpley, author of 9/11 Synthetic Terror and a whole lot of other great books. Unfortunately, Webster had a prior commitment, or rather a new commitment that he had to make, so he'll be back on later. So I found somebody, though, who I think you're going to really be happy was able to take advantage of this opportunity to come on. You know, when I first met Webster Tarpley, it was at the Truth Emergency Convergence convention in Washington, D.C. in July of 2005. And just as this event transpired, another event transpired across the Atlantic Ocean, a series of bombings in the London Tube and on a bus, Webster Tarpley was suddenly the focus of a lot of attention at this conference because his book, 9/11 Synthetic Terror, told exactly how these kinds of false flag attacks, because he was saying, all right when it happened, this is an obvious false flag attack, how these kinds of attacks are organized, and who does it, and why, and how. He wrote the book on it. Well, Webster can't be in my show tonight, but I do have someone who is one of the leading public figures disputing the official account of the 7/7 attacks in London. His name is Muad'Dib. I hope I'm pronouncing it properly. He'll come on soon and correct me if I'm not. He made a wonderful documentary called 7/7 Ripple Effect, which can be viewed, just Google it up, 7/7 Ripple Effect. It'll take you to jforjustice.co.uk, and you can watch this film. It's disturbing, of course, but, you know, 9/11 truth is not just an American issue. We're really dealing with war on terror truth. And this is a global issue, folks. There have been false flag attacks designed to incite a war between the West and Islam all over the world. And it does appear that the London bombings were yet another of these false flag attacks. The evidence for it is quite strong, as you'll see if you watch 7/7 Ripple Effect. So tonight we're having a sort of an international radio night, talking with Eric Wahlberg from Cairo, Egypt, where it's past midnight. And now we're going to be moving to Ireland to talk with Muad'Dib, the maker of 7/7 Ripple Effect. The war on terror is, of course, known as GWAT, the Global War on Terror. It was launched with the 9/11 false flag attacks in New York and Washington, D.C., and it's continued all over the world with follow-up apparent false flag attacks in Bali, Madrid, London, Mumbai, and who knows where else. So if we're going to turn this planet around, it's not just a matter of exposing 9/11 in the USA to take back our country. Arise, patriots, overthrow the New World Order and everything will be fine. No, we're talking about a whole world that's united in so many ways, including united by this so-called global war on terror. So we'll be talking about the London bombings. I'll also be talking a little bit about what's going on in Ireland and the UK truth movement with Muad'Dib, who is under indictment, apparently. They're trying to extradite him from Ireland to the UK because he sent truth DVDs to a court where there was a show trial of terror patsies. He's a very brave man. It'll be an honor to have him on. And maybe we'll talk a little bit about the phony nature of the entire war on terror, which is the subject of my brand new book. We'll get to that in just a moment. So stay tuned for Muad'Dib right here on Truth Jihad. Welcome back. You're listening to Truth Jihad Radio right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I'm Kevin Barrett on the web at TruthJihad.com. And my guest in this second hour is Muad'Dib. He's a really an interesting guy who's made a wonderful film called 7/7 Ripple Effect, taking off on 9/11 Ripple Effect, which I'm actually in. And it's a good resource for people who want to look into the many questions about what actually happened in London on July 7th, 2005, the UK's version of 9/11. It was, you know, the thing that convinced so many people in the English-speaking world that, you know, we're in this thing for the long-term war that will not last, end in our lifetimes. It's a really great film. I'm looking forward to meeting Muad Dib someday. I don't know if I'll catch him on this trip to the UK. I'll be in the UK in early July, speaking in London on July 7th with Niels Herit, the lead author of the paper about the nanothermite in the World Trade Center dust. You can find all that stuff by looking at my website, truthjihad.com. Muad Dib is over in Ireland, and he's resisting attempts to extradite him to England to face prosecution for sending truth DVDs as a friend of the court brief to some of these show trials where they were hauling in terror patsies and, you know, putting a big PR event on to try to convince people that there's this evil Muslim terrorist plot against Western civilization. It's great to hear about people brave enough to put themselves on the line in this way. So it's a real honor to welcome Muad Dib to Truth Jihad Radio. Welcome, Muad Dib. Am I pronouncing your name right?
Muad Dib.
Muad Dib. Okay.
Dib rather than Dib, but yeah.
Okay. Is that Gaelic?
No. It's Arabic.
It is.
Yeah.
Muad Dib. Okay, I'm trying to think of what. Muad'Dib is in, as in
teacher of
educated?
Muad'Dib? It means teacher of righteousness.
Okay, well, welcome, teacher of righteousness.
Okay.
So,
nice to be with you.
It's great to have you on. I'm going to be speaking in London on July 7th with Niels Herit, and I won't be talking about the 7/7 attacks, partly because it's not my field of expertise. Also, they thought that it might be pushing things a little bit because there are people in the UK who are willing to look at 9/11 given the overwhelming evidence that it was an inside job, but 7/7 hits a little close to home. How convinced are you that 7/7, like 9/11, was an inside job?
Oh, I'm absolutely convinced, absolutely. And that's why I made the film. The whole thing's, I don't know where you want me to start, so I'll start with 9/11 because I know that you were in 9/11 Ripple Effect. When I saw the two towers come down, I was sitting with an old American gentleman who was visiting me and was in his 80s. And the previous day, we'd been talking about the state of the American economy, and he said to me, there will have to be a war. It's their only way out of the situation that they're in. And then the very next day, we were sitting in Dublin, in the ferry terminal there, and they have a very, very large widescreen in there, in the waiting area. And they were showing what was happening in America, and it was a news flash, and of course it took over the whole day's transmission. And as we watched what had happened, and then we saw the towers with the second plane hit, and all the fuel burnt on the outside of the tower, as you know, so it couldn't possibly have been inside to have burnt the building. And the second tower to be hit, where the fuel had burnt on the outside and had been burning for less time than the first building, came down first.
Right, it burned for 45 minutes, an ordinary office fire for 45 minutes. It was hit by a plane, sort of nicked it on the corner, and boom, it just comes down first for no reason.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And this American gentleman looked at me, and I looked at him as we saw the buildings come down, and he said to me, are you thinking what I'm thinking? And I said, I think so, but you tell me what you're thinking and we'll see if we agree on it. And he said, we both more or less spoke at the same time, and we said, that was controlled demolition. Right there, when we saw the buildings come down, there was absolutely no doubt in either of our minds that those planes did not bring down those buildings, that they were brought down by controlled demolition.
Well, you were quicker than me to figure that out. It took me 2 years.
Oh.
I know, it's pretty pathetic, isn't it? I'm a slow learner.
It was obvious. If you look, you know, if you forget about the hype and all the rest of it, it was obvious. Just to watch them come down, there's no way that they could have been brought down by those planes.
You're absolutely right, and now I feel like a fool for having actually seen it on TV and not having understood right away what was going on. I mean, I was suspicious, but, you know, you don't have any other real references to allow you to understand that something like this is possible. Well, takes a while sometimes to just wrap your mind around things like this.
I suppose it's such an enormous event that you can't believe that it's happening, is the first thing that would happen. But when you've seen buildings on TV and things, you've seen buildings brought down by controlled demolition, it shouted at us that that's what was happening, that it was controlled demolition. And then, of course, over the years following that, looking into it and investigating, looking online at all the different films that people were bringing out and all the different theories, and everybody has done a wonderful job, really. And then it got to the point where I can't remember why, but I watched the film that you were in, the 9/11 Ripple Effect, and I really liked the way the film was made. It wasn't hype, it wasn't sensationalizing anything, it was just giving the facts as Dave von Kleist saw them, and the other people, you know, like you in the film. And it dawned on me that nobody made a film about 7/7, and that it was really the 9/11 Ripple Effect, which is why I called my film 7/7 Ripple Effect. It was really the 9/11 Ripple Effect that got me to make the film. We'd been investigating, because we knew about 9/11, we'd been investigating 7/7 from the 7th of July 2005. And been investigating it for about 2 years, and the more we investigated, the more we found, and the fact that the government story, like 9/11, it just doesn't stand up to investigation. It's full of inconsistencies, it's full of contradictions, and also we found that they'd fabricated evidence. I don't know if any of your viewers have actually seen any of the things to do with 7/7. I know Americans are kind of America-centered. They tend to not to look at what's happening outside.
Kind of.
Well, yeah. I'm being nice. Okay. But if any of them have looked into the 7/7 at all and seen the official photograph that was put out by the authorities of supposedly the four alleged bombers, and I'm only going to call them alleged because I know they didn't do it, outside Luton Station. And if you analyse that official photograph, it's obvious that it's been photoshopped and it's a made up picture.
As I recall, isn't there sort of a railing or something it goes in front of and behind the person at the same time or something like
that's
that?
That's right, and the top rail goes through his neck.
Right.
And there's lots of other anomalies in it as well. And also the first guy in it was Hasib Hussain, who was the closest to the door. If you look behind him at the reflection, because there's a glass panel behind them, in the building, and instead of it being a mirror image, it's just a smaller image of him, but not reversed, which is impossible. Exactly.
Yeah.
So the more you look at it, the more you see that it's a made-up photograph. And then once you understand that the authorities are fabricating evidence, that puts everything that they tell you, in question.
Well, indeed it does. And when you start asking questions about some of these things, like the thing that first got me very, very, very suspicious about 7/7 was the report of Peter Power, the terrorist consultant for Visor Consultants, who said he was part of a terror drill that day. And
yeah,
he was on television on 7/7, wasn't he, saying that the bombs went off at exactly the times and locations as the imaginary bombs in the drill that he was running on behalf of unnamed parties?
Yes. That's exactly what happened, and
well,
it was also...
That's mind-boggling. I mean, that's pretty much a smoking gun in and of itself, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the chances of that happening by coincidence are just infinitesimal. There's just no way that could have been coincidence. And in the film, I've explained about... I've actually shown the clip from the TV on the news where he was making this statement. And I've said, you know, was he a dupe or was he part of the conspiracy? Because there's obviously a conspiracy. It's very difficult to. I'm not used to doing this kind of thing, talking on radio shows. So
you're doing very well.
Oh, thank you. I think you're being kind, but I'll do my best. He refused to divulge which company he was working on behalf of, and that made everybody suspicious.
Just the fact that some company is staging a terror drill, and the bombs go off in exactly the times and locations the real bombs go off, and that's when the fake bombs were supposed to go off in the terror drill. I mean, that just tells you right there's something fishy. And, of course, the simplest explanation would be that, as Webster Tarpley says, false flag terror events are typically set up by way of drills. And that gives the people doing it an excuse for the kinds of work that they're doing with colleagues in their intelligence agency offices and so on. It allows them to do all the things that are required to arrange for the false flag attack under the cover of simply arranging a drill.
That's correct. Yeah. Yeah, and then suddenly it goes live.
Indeed. And that's one reason that so many people here in the U.S. have been trying to track all of the terror drills. Every time they say there's going to be a new terror drill, people are, internet journalists and honest citizens are all over it, exposing it, talking about which date it's going to happen, and, hoping that by focusing attention on these things ahead of time, it won't go live. They won't be able to do it.
Yeah.
So you also mentioned in your film that there was apparently a kind of a prologue to 7/7. There was a BBC program a year before 7/7 that you say imagined what would happen if there was a terrorist attack in London in the near future involving three explosions on tube trains and one on a road vehicle.
Yes, that's correct.
And, tell us more about that.
Well, Peter Power was also in charge of that. He was on in that program with the BBC, because they always tend to call him as the expert when anything to do with terrorism is on the TV. He's the sort of person that they always call for his opinion. But so he was part of this television program, and it was about three tube trains, explosions on three tube trains, and a road vehicle. The road vehicle wasn't a bus in that particular scenario. It was a tanker with chlorine in it. And so there was, once that blew up, it poisoned in this mock drill. It poisoned lots and lots of people in the vicinity, and people were told to stay in the house and keep the doors and the windows closed, and block off air vents and things like that. But they were talking about what they would do and how they would control the media coverage of it. They said that they could use their special powers, government powers, to get the BBC to broadcast whatever they wanted, that they could take over the BBC. One of the politicians who was on it said, oh no, we shouldn't do that. So they were playing good cop, bad cop. And he said, but the Prime Minister would need to be on the air very quickly to calm the people and tell them what was happening. And he actually said that he was wondering what the purpose of the program was that he was taking part in. And it seemed to me that they were thinking about and planning for what was going to happen in the future. In fact, in the program, they said that the government has been telling people over and over again that this is the kind of thing that is going to happen. And so I said in their film, it's a shame that your people probably haven't seen the film, because it would make it much easier to talk about if they knew what we were talking about in the first place by having watched the film, which is why I asked you previously if you could fit it in and let them watch it so that they would understand exactly what we were talking about.
Well, I think we can stay at a level that they'll understand. But yeah, I'm sorry about that. I was intending to get people to take a look at 7-7 Ripple Effect last week, and I apologize for not having alerted people to that. But it's I think though that the this topic is something that we can definitely make some sense out of. As far as the security firms involved in this terror drill and evidence of foreknowledge on the part of people such as wasn't Benjamin Netanyahu, the recently elected twice elected prime minister of Israel, given some sort of foreknowledge that something was going to happen?
Yes.
Yeah, tell us about that.
He was warned by Mossad about 10 minutes before the first bomb went off to stay in his hotel room and not go out. And then he said that it was Scotland Yard, which is the British Metropolitan Police, had warned him.
And they denied it.
And then they denied it, and then it came out later that it was the head of Mossad and that had warned him. So they had contacted him from Israel to tell him what was going to happen in London. How did they know? Unless they were involved in it.
You know, that Netanyahu character gives me the chills. I mean, he's right in the middle of so many of these things. I mean, he actually called the conference at which the War on Terror concept was launched back in 1979. It was called the Jerusalem Conference on International Terrorism. They invited George Bush the Elder, a whole bunch of top foreign policy honchos from the U.S. and around the West. They all came to Israel and mapped out a plan to exaggerate the threat of terrorism in order to instill fear in Western populations and unite them behind aggressive policies.
Mm-hmm.
Netanyahu has been involved in all sorts of other stuff. He's linked very closely in several ways to the 9/11 attacks. We'll be back to talk some more with Muad'Dib, the maker of 7-7 Ripple Effect. Welcome back to Truth Jihad Radio. You're listening to AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I'm Kevin Barrett on the web at TruthJihad.com. And we're talking right now with Muad'Dib, the maker of 7-7 Ripple Effect, a really good resource for researching and understanding what really happened in London on the 7th of July, 2005. There's also a book coming out on this apparent false flag terror attack by Nick Kullerstrom. It should be out anytime, and I'm looking forward to meeting Nick when I'm in London in early July. We'll be speaking on July 7th in London, along with Niels Harrit, the author of the new paper about the thermite, nano-thermite, high-tech explosives found in the World Trade Center dust. Muad'Dib, we were just talking about the abundant evidence that something is very, very wrong with the official story of 7-7. One example was the foreknowledge of Benjamin Netanyahu, who was warned 10 minutes before the bombs went off, apparently by the Mossad. Netanyahu is certainly a person of interest. As I was saying before the break, he created the whole concept of a war on terror at his Jerusalem Conference on International Terrorism in 1979. He bankrolled further think tank activities of the neoconservatives. And, in fact, he then was linked to 9/11 by virtue of the fact that he is a very close friend of Larry Silverstein, the billionaire, shady real estate Zionist mogul who purchased the World Trade Center, doubled the insurance 6 weeks before 9/11. He would have lost all his money very quickly had the World Trade Center not been demolished. As it was, he walked away with billions of dollars in cash profit. Possibly he'll end up walking away with $17 billion plus the rights to rebuild. He's in court right now suing the insurance companies. The man has no shame. Anyway, it's interesting that Silverstein, a close friend of Netanyahu, is a key figure in the apparent controlled demolition of the World Trade Center. Netanyahu then was in London on 7-7 and was given a 10-minute lead time warning by the Mossad. Do you think that these Western intelligence networks are all working together, or is the Mossad a key player in this? We're moving into speculation here, but what's your take on that?
Well, I think they have to be. Otherwise, they couldn't pull these things off. George Bush was over in England at the time, also at Glen Eagles with Tony Blair, and they worked together on most of the things. But the security firms in London for the video cameras surveillance on the undergrounds is an Israeli company called Verint Systems, and it's staffed, I understand, by ex-Mossad agents, so that brings the Mossad in again. And there is no footage showing the alleged bombers in the underground and getting on those tube trains. Now, prior to that, there's lots and lots of footage of them, very clear footage of them doing a supposed reconnaissance run, a trial run, on the 28th of June. But yet, when we come to the day of 7/7, to the actual day of the event, there is no video of them.
Well, that's really strange, isn't it? Because the same cameras that should have caught them during the exorcist or during the dry run should have caught them during the actual event.
Exactly that, and they didn't work on that day, and they were being controlled by people, by Israelis, who, you know, as I understand it, were ex-members of Mossad, which is the Israeli intelligence service that we've referenced. Yeah, the whole thing stinks. Plus, on the bus, they have video cameras on the buses, and well, I'm not sure which system was on that particular bus, but Verint Systems, who have their cameras on the underground, also fit their cameras to lots of London buses. So it's a good bet that the cameras on the bus were also Verint cameras. And there's no footage off the bus either. The whole thing stinks. If you go, the more you go through it, which we did for 2 years, the more you find that the whole thing, none of it makes sense. The official story, the alleged bombers were supposed to have caught the 7:40 a.m. train from Luton to London to Thames Link station at King's Cross. And then have caught the tubes. But that morning, the hand of God interfered because the 7:40 train was cancelled that day, so they couldn't possibly have caught it. And all the trains were delayed. That one was cancelled, and there was no way that they could have made it from Luton to London in time to catch those tube trains that blew up. It wasn't possible for them to be on those trains.
Well, if it wasn't their backpack that had the explosives, perhaps that explains why the holes blown in the floors of some of these vehicles appeared to have been something underneath the floors that created the explosion.
Yeah, it seems that, well, the whole thing is like, they told us, first of all, that these were homemade explosives. And then afterwards, there were explosives experts that said, no, these were military grade high explosives. And eyewitnesses reported, who were in the carriages and survived, reported that the floors blew upwards as though the bombs were fastened underneath the trains, not blowing down as they would do if the bombs had been inside the trains. And also the fact that the trains were lifted up off the tracks and derailed, which is also fits with the bombs being under the floors, because they would then explode, they would rip the floors, but they would lift, as they were lifting the floor to rip it, they would also lift the trains off the tracks, which is what happened. They got derailed. Plus, one of the witnesses who was interviewed stated that in the place where the bomb went off on his tube, there was nobody sitting there, and there was no bags, no backpacks, there was nothing there. No Muslims, there was nobody on the train. The fact that that the 7:40 train from Luton was cancelled and they couldn't possibly have been on those trains explains why Variant Systems have said there isn't, you know, that their cameras weren't working. That's why they've got no footage of these alleged bombers catching the tube trains.
Well, you know, it's amazing. The same thing is true of 9/11. There's not a shred of footage of any of the alleged 19 hijackers getting on any of the alleged attack planes. There's one, some alleged footage of Muhammad Atta getting on the plane at Portland, Maine, but that wasn't the attack plane. And no. Then there's an obviously fake, doctored photo, supposedly from security cameras, of the alleged hijackers at Dulles Airport in Washington, D.C., but the shadows are all wrong for the time of day for the 9/11 flight. So there's not a single piece of evidence that any of these 19 guys got on any of these 19 planes. There are no boarding passes. They're not on any official passenger lists. There was no testimony from any of the airline people who would have ticketed and boarded them. You know, not a shred of security camera footage. Like 7/7, it appears that these patsies were not even on the vehicles that they supposedly destroyed.
No. And then afterwards, the BBC, which is a government organ, a propaganda machine, has been giving footage showing the smoke coming out of the tunnel when one of the tubes took off from the station. And they start off by saying, and the bomber is already on the tube train. Yeah, and we're supposed to believe them. You know, so then this, they say, is proof that it was these people. You know, if on the 28th of June, which is just, you know, 2 or 3 weeks, well, in fact, 2 weeks prior to that, they got all this perfect footage, really clear, you can see that it's these people, and then on the day, they've got nothing. And then also you've got the anomaly of the fact that there were news reports, and all of my evidence in the film comes from mainstream media. It's nothing, I haven't fabricated anything whatsoever. All of the evidence comes from TV and print media, international media. And I just took all of the evidence and all of the anomalies and put it all together and used common sense and Occam's razor. And Occam's razor says that the simplest answer is usually, all things being equal, the simplest answer is usually the right one. And the only sense that all of the evidence made was the fact that these four Muslims were recruited to take part in this exercise and were set up as patsies. And because they didn't catch these tube trains, and they didn't catch, well, we don't know about Hasib Hussain, whether he caught the bus or not, because that bomb went off later. And I've speculated a little bit on that in the film, as you probably know if you've seen it. But the other three couldn't possibly have been on those tube trains. And the print media gave out the fact that morning, and the TV, that some suicide bombers had been shot and neutralized in Canary Wharf, which is the east end of London. Now, if they were suicide bombers, if they had been on the train and they had been suicide bombers, they would have died on the tubes. How could they possibly then have been in Canary Wharf to have been shot by the police? Or by special branch or some branch of the military, military intelligence. So,
What happened with the follow-up of this story about shootings of suicide terrorists at Canary Wharf? Did the media follow up on it?
No, not at all, no. It died. It was just announced once on TV, and it was picked up by, I think it was the New Zealand Herald, and the Globe and Mail in Canada, who reported that they'd had people in Canary Wharf who were reporters and had reported to them that these assassinations took place. So if you set up these people as patsies and then they didn't die on the trains with the bombs as they were supposed to, then you would have to silence them.
Sort of like Lee Harvey Oswald in the theater.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. And so the best thing really is for everybody to watch the film and see it, because I've taken people through, you know, chronologically and the progression of how it was, how it seems that it was set up. I mean, I believe that what I put in the film is my firm belief that, that the film is 99.9%, if not 100% accurate about what happened.
Yeah,
on,
I think
on all of the evidence. And
I think you're right. It's the most plausible hypothesis out there.
Everybody who has an open mind and has watched the film is convinced that it is true.
Well, I hope my listeners will take this opportunity to be sure and watch 7-7 Ripple Effect. And, you know, we'll have to have you back on to talk some more about it after more of my listeners have seen it. But
that
what you've gotten in trouble for sending DVDs of this film to the courts that were setting up, you know, kangaroo courts to try terror patsies.
Yeah.
Tell us a little bit about that. What? How did you get in legal hot water over this?
Well, because I'm fighting the government, or I'm embarrassing the government, so they have to attack me and try and shut me up and make an example of me to deter other people. But
I know the feeling.
Oh, yeah, what upset me greatly was the fact that, having done all this investigating and having made the film, and knowing, or being, I'm as sure as I possibly can be, or as anybody can be, that these four alleged bombers were innocent and they were patsies.
Okay, and so, we'll have to pick it up after the break and hear about how you mailed these 7-7 Truth DVDs to a court and then got chased by the British government that's still trying to extradite you, last I heard, in just a moment. This is Kevin Barrett on Truth Jihad Radio with Muadib. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back. You're listening to Truth Jihad Radio right here on AmericanFreedomRadio.com. I'm your host, Kevin Barrett, on the web at TruthJihad.com. I have a brand new book just coming out called Questioning the War on Terror, A Primer for Obama Voters. Now, that doesn't mean you have to be an Obama voter to buy the book. No, in fact, you should buy the book and then give it to your Obama voting friends. And the nonprofit publisher will give you 10 copies of the book for only $50 plus $5 postage. $5 a piece, pretty good deal. To give it to everybody you know that voted for Obama. These are people with good intentions who just need a little bit of education to see through the sham and then rise up and put an end to it. And speaking of putting an end to the sham of the so-called war on terror, I'm talking tonight with Muadib, who is under, I guess, an attempt to extradite him from Ireland to England because he did what any honest person would do if they had information that a miscarriage of justice was taking place in a courtroom. It would be their moral and legal obligation to contact that court, file a friend of the court brief, give that court information that would help the court avoid the miscarriage of justice. That's exactly what my guest Muadib did. He sent his 7-7 Ripple Effect movie on DVD to the courts in England, where they were trying these terror patsies in Stalinist-style show trials, and as a result, the Brits are trying to extradite him. Muadib, can you tell us a little more about that, or are you not supposed to talk about it?
Well, I think I can. I've been advised by lawyers not to talk about it because, you know, not to admit that I sent them and all this kind of stuff. But I think we can talk about it, and I'm not really all that keen on lawyers.
Well, yeah, so, I would say not admitting that you sent this DVD to the court that was staging Stalinist-style show trials of terror patsies, that would be like, you know, not admitting that you'd done a heroic deed, you know? I mean, come on, folks.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah.
Well, having done all this investigation and proved to my satisfaction and the satisfaction of everybody that has an open mind and watches the film, having proved that the four alleged bombers were patsies, that they didn't commit these crimes, and that they were murdered on that day, just like the innocent people on the tubes and on the bus were murdered in this false flag operation. They then put three other young Muslims on trial who were friends of the four alleged bombers who didn't do it, And they put them on trial for assisting by doing reconnaissance for these four alleged bombers. They put them on trial. They had absolutely no evidence against these three young men at all. And what they were, to my opinion, what they were attempting to do was they were desperate to convict these three young men in order to, by extension, say, look, these three are guilty of helping them, so by extension, the four alleged bombers were guilty as well. And the jury, it was reported in the media that the prosecuting lawyer, he's a QC, barrister, they call him in the UK, he told the jury that the four alleged bombers, that there was no doubt, no dispute, that they were guilty of doing these bombings. So he was actually misleading the jury and lying to the jury, because there are millions of people who dispute and doubt that these four people committed these crimes. And the judge also, when he was picking the jury, he told them the same thing, that he said to the jury, as you know, these four young men, you know, committed these terrible crimes. And so the judge himself and the prosecution were misinforming the jury. They were lying to the jury and misleading the jury. It was quite possible that they were misguided in what they were doing, that they actually believed what they were saying, because they didn't know any better. So it was my duty to point out to them that they were misleading the jury, and that they were, that there was going to be a mistrial and a miscarriage of justice. And so when I saw that this was happening, and I knew that the four original ones were innocent, and they were trying these other three on the strength that they said they helped them to do something that they never did in the first place, it was impossible for them to help these four patsies to do something that these four patsies never did. And so I sent copies of the film to the court, to the judge, and to the jury, because they're the ones, at the end of the day, they're the ones that do the deciding on whether people are guilty or innocent. And so they are the people that have to have all of the evidence. And what was happening was that the government were trying to prevent the jury from being fully informed. Now, only a fully informed jury can come to the right decision.
I'm an old supporter of the Fully Informed Jury Association here in the USA.
Yeah, and if the jury are having important evidence withheld from them, and on top of that they're being lied to, you can't possibly have a fair trial. So it was my duty to send the evidence to the court, as a friend of the court, so that if the judge was genuinely mistaken, that he would watch the film, he would see that he was mistaken, and he would correct his error and tell the jury the truth.
But unfortunately, the process of getting the truth out is a little bit slower than that, but we're working on it. Well, thank you so much. It's been wonderful to have you on. Everybody, go see 77 Ripple Effect. Just Google it up, 77 Ripple Effect, and I'll have you back on in the future. We'll talk about it, and hopefully our audience will have seen it.
Yeah, can I just tell you why they're trying to extradite me?
Yeah, you have about 15 seconds.
Oh, okay. They've accused me of attempting to pervert the course of justice in the trial.
Oh, boy.
I was trying to prevent them from perverting the course of justice, and I was trying to prevent a miscarriage of justice.
But hear, hear.
They've accused me of doing what they were doing, as criminals usually do, try and accuse somebody else to take...